Hey, true believers, it's that time you've been waiting for. Gather around your iPod, radio, or whatever you're listening to, for Mitch and John are about to go into the power cosmic. Sit back and listen to comic books, toys, movies, and more with those two guys that've got nothing better to do but talk about the stuff that you love. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, wake the neighbors, phone the kids. It's time for the Power Cosmic Podcast. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Power Cosmic Podcast. I'm your host, Mitchell A.S. Halleck, the producer of the world's greatest Comic-Con, happening every August at Mohegan Sun. It's called Terrific-Con. Why are you listening to me? You should be out there buying your tickets. It's 3 days of fun-filled excitement with movie stars and more comic book artists and writers than you can shake the cosmic... What was it? The cosmic rod? Whatever the molecule man had.
Cosmic control rod.
The cosmic controller. Don't accept the ultimate nullifier. Go for the show that's got the best. The one that the Celestials would go to. And speaking
not
of
the
Celestials.
The cosmic controller. The cosmic control rod.
Okay. Before the man you hear at the other end of this podcast who's correcting me about the instrument of destruction used by the molecule man would be the one.
No! No! Annihilus!
No, I was talking about the Molecule Man and his little magic wand. That's why I'm saying, what are you talking about?
And what's that called?
That was called the rod.
The control rod?
Yeah, that's why you're yelling at me. I'm like, I'm not...
Bad information.
I'm going to look it up. I mean, all right. But anyway, let's get with the introductions here, and then you can start yelling at me. Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, all the way from the Random Flea Market in Massachusetts, he collects everything that he could get his hands on, and then some. You know him, you love him. You can read about his articles in Back Issue Magazine, Alter Ego Magazine, and The Kirby Collector. Roy Thomas is personal agent. If you want Roy, you got to see this guy. Give it up for the Random Flea Market, booth A89-90's number one seller of comic books, toys, and more, John Cimino.
Hey, what's up, everybody? How you doing, Mitch?
Well, before we get on to this, do you want me to look up on the internet and see what the hell the Molecule Man is?
Yeah, let's do that. But Annihilus is friggin' in the negative zone. His friggin' thing was called the cosmic control rod.
Right.
No, I'm messing it up now. Look it up. You got me all friggin' in a bunch right now.
Oh, come on. We're gonna really give up valuable airtime to go prove that I'm right and you're wrong.
I'm sure that's all on me. But the cosmic control rod, That's friggin' Annihilus' friggin' thing.
All right, fine. I'm looking it up right now. The Molecule Man. Molecule Man. Talk about something as people listen to this exciting podcast and find me looking up the Molecule Man here. What a waste of life. But this is what it's like here at the Power Cosmic when we sit around and we waste time about things like this. Right?
Well, but the Molecule Man was probably one of the most powerful guys in the Marvel Universe.
Yeah, he's the one that took down the Beyonder, isn't he?
Well, yeah, but he doesn't have much balls. You know, he doesn't got balls.
All right, ready? Here we go. All right, Owen Reese, a timid child from Brooklyn, New York, excessively clung to his mother. Blah 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 blah. He can control. Okay, here's what it is. He was disgruntled with his long hours and low-paying job. One day, Reese accidentally received and activated an experimental particle generator, which bombarded him with an unknown form of radiation. This radiation had a mutagenic effect on Reese, releasing his potential to psychonic powers on a cosmic scale. He can control all matter, molecule levels, la 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 la, made lightning bolts on his face. Yeah, see, I thought he had a rod that would made him. Oh, here it is. No, here it is. He believed he was unable to affect organic molecules and that his power resided in the metal wand. See, he believed that was from. But however, the Uatu, the Watcher, realized he was a threat, told the Fantastic Four, yada, yada, yada. I don't know. See, I thought it was all from the rod, too.
You're wrong.
I'm reading Wikipedia.
Go to friggin' Annihilus. Why didn't you go to the Molecule?
Why am I on Annihilus? I have nothing to do with Annihilus.
I'm telling you, it has everything to do with Annihilus.
Well, anyway, Annihilus. The Molecule Man came out in Fantastic Four, issue 20. Yeah. Whatever. What am I looking up now?
Annihilus. Will you look up Annihilus?
All right. And that's going to tie into today's story, so we're good.
It does. It kind of does,
It
yes.
does in a weird way. All right. Annihilus. Fictional supervillain in American comics created by Marvel.
Just look at his weapon. Paraphernalia. Jesus Christ.
All right. He appeared in the 1968 Fantastic Four Annual, number 6, in the Negative Zone. He leads this. So what am I looking for?
What the hell is he? The Cosmic Control Rod.
Annihilus' first encounter. Oh, yeah. He was stealing his control rod. Sue was pregnant. Complication. His minions captured the heroes, but they escaped, stealing Annihilus' control rod. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What? The Cosmic Control Rod.
Okay. All right. What does that have to do with anything?
I told you I was right. Don't ever think you're
but
right.
But I was talking about the Molecule Man.
Yeah, but you called it like you didn't have it. It didn't even have a name.
Okay, all right. Listen, we're gonna pretend none of this happened. We're going to start calmly.
But you talked about the Watchers, so yeah.
Yeah, okay. It's all going to make sense in about 2 seconds.
Maybe not to us.
We are here talking about Marvel's 15th film in their ongoing cinematic universe that opened up once again number one at the box office. They cannot strike out. We thought it was going to happen, but it still has not happened yet. We're talking about Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, the latest film from the Marvel Magic Studios. How about that, John?
I had no doubt in my mind.
Okay, we both have seen the film. I've seen it twice already in the big theaters.
Oh, not I've only, seen it four times, Mitch. Four times.
Not only have I seen it twice in the theaters, I also saw it in theaters that were playing the magical, terrific trailer for Terrific-Con that's drawn by Mr. Jerry Ordway. It was first ever Jerry Ordway animation on the big screen as we see Captain Terrific-Con and his new assistant, Ms. Terrific-Con, flying to the Mohegan Sun for the 3 days of Comic-Con action this August 18th to the 20th. How about that, John?
Well, that's a big step, huh? Ms. Terrific-Con is there, too?
We were going to call her Terrific-Connie, but I got a little aversion to that name.
Kind of reminds me a little of the Marvel family. Now you're going to have Captain Terrific-Con Jr.
I'm going to have to, I am Uncle Terrific-Con. I'm going to put on the little...
That would be funny if you can get Jerry to put, like, Uncle Terrific-Con, and it looks like, Uncle Marvel, but it looks like Mitchie.
Okay, enough of that. So anyway, we were talking about Guardians of the Galaxy. It opened $145 million. I thought it was going to make $154. But still, that's nothing to sneeze at. It made $450 worldwide already in a couple days. This is a juggernaut, a behemoth, a blockbuster. And we're here to talk about the film. Do we want to talk about the history of the characters, or do we want to just talk right about the movie? Let's just talk about the movie, right?
Yeah, let's start with the movie. All right. I have to say, when I saw the trailers, I was like, it's good and done. It's done and won. I knew it was going to be over. I knew it was going to be huge. I knew it was going to work.
Now, you and I both know, as comic book fans, when they first announced the original Guardians of the Galaxy that came out in 2014, we're a little skeptical about it because, one, those characters were your bargain bin heroes. The original Guardians of the Galaxy, they sucked. Let's just put it out there, okay? No one liked them, right?
Oh, yeah, that's true. They were kind of throwaways.
They're up there. I'm going to say they're on the level of three. Again, no offense to Roy, but they're up there with 3D Man, Torpedo Man, or Torpedo. Remember that guy?
Yeah.
With the silver fins on his head. He's kind of like the Rocketeer, but he was Torpedo. They're up there with the Rocket Racer, okay? They were back. I don't even know where to put the Guardians of the Galaxy. The original ones that had Charlie 27, Martin X, Starhawk. Who am I forgetting? Yondu. No. Sucked. It was just a bad book. It was not great.
Either way, it was bad.
And Arnold Drake did it. Gene Colan did the artwork. It was in Marvel Superheroes. I'm going to say issue 4, maybe?
Oh, the Marvel. Yeah, it was something like that.
And that book sells for what? About $200 or $300 now?
Yeah, you can go for that now. Yeah, correct.
Yeah, and then, of course, they brought on a new series in the early 90s with Jim Valentino. I know one of your favorites. You don't like him very much.
Ugh.
Who went on to fame over at Image for doing Street Hawk or Dark Hawk?
Shit Hawk, I think.
Okay. All right. And then, of course, now you mentioned Annihilus a couple minutes ago. You were feverish about him. He plays an important role because they had a series back in 2008 called Annihilation at Marvel, and it was done by Keith Giffen, who you will see at this year's Terrificon this August. And he brought back a new series of Guardians of the Galaxy. They had a new Star-Lord, not the one that was created by Steve Englehart, who was also at Terrificon. They had Drax the Destroyer, Star-Lord, Rocket Raccoon, Bug from the Micronauts. Remember that book?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Bug was in there. And he's not in the movie. I don't think they have the rights to the toys. And some other characters. So anyway, the whole new Guardians of the Galaxy that these movies are based on are based directly from that miniseries, and that was a big hit. And then these guys, Dan Abnett and... what's his name? Dan Abnett and Andy Lenning. They went on and they did a series of the Guardians of the Galaxy, and that's what they used for the movies. So there's your history lesson real quick. But this movie opens up, it's only, have you noticed it's only a couple months after the last one?
Oh, like it takes place?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, because obviously Groot has grown a little bit, right?
Yeah, a little bit, because I noticed when they show the movie, it starts off in 1980, and then it says 34 years later. And if you looked at the first Guardians of the Galaxy, and you do the time frame, it's only about a year after the last movie. So... I noticed that, yeah. So anyway, Kurt Russell's in it. Now, Kurt Russell, I know Kurt Russell from those Disney movies before you were born, like The Computer That Wore Tennis Shoes, The World's Greatest Athlete. You know him from things like, what, Tango and Cash, The Thing, Escape from New York.
Yeah, that's what I know him.
He was an 80s kind of action star, like a B-rate Harrison Ford, my favorite. But
superb actor too.
But they brought him back in this movie. He shows the origins of Star-Lord when he meets his mother and he impregnates her. And then we flash forward 34 years later and we see the Guardians of the Galaxy and Baby Groot taking down some big alien thing. And it was laugh riot as soon as the movie started, I thought, John. What did you think? Would you see that this is a comedic film?
Yes. I'm going to go on record, and I said this before to you, and I think it's the best Marvel movie, period.
Wait, stop. The Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 is the best Marvel movie ever?
Ever. Now, I'm going to tell you why. Let me say it, Mitchie. Hold on. You just sit down and let me defend myself. Okay. One, because first off, the movie reminded me of like a roller coaster ride. Once it went on, it just kept going. It never let up. It was almost like you were tied to your seat and you were going up and down, and it just kept going. It was so entertaining. The music was so perfect, and plus you remember all that music stuff, especially somebody like me who was a little kid growing up in the 80s, that I remembered so many of those songs. But yes, Baby Groot, and plus how much fun my daughter had. I watched these movies, and I lived vicariously through my daughter. And I watched, look at her, and I can see how unbelievable, like, she just, her wide-eyed and just loving it, laughing, crying, wanting, you know, it was awesome. And I was just like, this is the greatest movie of all time. For me, yes, all time, because it just was a great bonding thing with me and my kid, but plus I was like, it just, everything hit me. The Baby Groot, just the humor. Now, some people may look at me, now it doesn't have the seriousness of probably Civil War, which I thought was, you know, that could be the best in continuity one, but there's something about Guardians of the Galaxy that made it so fun. And I'm not a big Star Wars guy, and I know you are a big Harrison Ford guy, but Star Wars reminds me of like an eccentric Harrison Ford, like Han Solo. And I had that feeling, and I never liked Star Wars, but I had that feeling of Star Wars watching Star Wars. It's more Star Wars to me than Star Wars is. I don't know, Mitch, but and I'm sticking to it.
All right, John. I'm just saying, I just happened to watch this weekend, even though I own the movies on DVD, I own the digital copies that I can watch on my telephone or my laptop, I'm still watching TV this weekend, and they had a marathon on the FX channel of Captain America 1 and 2, The Avengers, Thor, and then they showed the Guardians of the Galaxy. I'm still watching them, but like I said, I would always put Guardians number 1 is up there with my favorite movies of all time. But I would think Avengers would have been your go-to Marvel film for what they pulled off. But you're saying that Guardians 2 has that magic Marvel formula. That's what I was just a little shocked by.
Right. Obviously, you know me being a big Hulk fan. Avengers movie is the Hulk's first movie. All that other stuff I don't believe in. It's just like Civil War is Spider-Man's first movie. All that other stuff I don't believe in. Yes, that was awesome. But there was a little bit of a seriousness to Avengers, and I'm not gonna take that away, but it just felt so good, and like I went there from the credits with a smile, and I left there with a smile. I couldn't believe how entertaining. Now you got to remember, maybe some of the stories and little things here and there may could have been cheesy, a little this here and little that. But it was so entertaining. There was no lag time in that movie at all for me. It just kept going and going. I don't know, Mitch. I tell you, the best.
All right, well, let's take it apart piece by piece. And if you haven't seen the movie yet, then what the hell are you listening to us for? Go to the goddamn movies. It's probably Bargain Tuesday. Spend $5, you cheap bastards. Now, look, the movie starts off, like I said, a couple months after the first adventure when they all got together. And Star-Lord quickly is involved in some trouble. Rocket Raccoon's trying to steal something from an alien race that we're going to learn that plays a role later on, and possibly for number 3, but we'll jump ahead.
Mitch, wait, you missed something there. Remember when they were going to fight that alien, and then Rocket is making the, you know, he's putting like the music
together?
Yeah,
so they could, yeah, they got music on.
Peter likes to play the music, you know, when they're going to do it, they got to play the music while they're doing it. Yeah. And then obviously with Baby Groot, like trying to put the thing, and then he dances, and it just starts. It was so perfect to accentuate Baby Groot right there, and like it built off what Baby Groot did, that little dancing stuff, and it never stopped, man.
You just wanted to pick up Baby Groot and hug him, didn't you?
Oh, and my daughter will always talk about when toward the end, when things are looking bad, and then Baby Groot starts crying, you know, he gets the tear.
Yeah.
And so my daughter still talks about that. So I mean, it was just so impressionable. And like how they couldn't kill Baby Groot when he said, no, he's just so adorable. And isn't that kind of guy going to be a terrific guy?
Yeah, that's right. Let's go. Another plug. Taserface, which is a funny character in the film, played by actor Chris Sullivan, who's also on a big NBC show called This Is Us, will be appearing at Terrificon, Connecticut's Terrific Comic Con, this August 18th to the 20th. Go see him. So anyway, they quickly get in trouble, and there's the music playing, and what happens is they get saved by a gentleman played by Kurt Russell, who turns out to be Ego. Now, if you know your Marvel comics, Ego, the living planet, and they play up to that, and how basically he was this brain, space brain, floating in space, and he became conscious, and he wanted to know more what's out there. So just like God himself that takes the form of Jesus to walk amongst men, Ego takes the form of a human, a la the body of Kurt Russell, and went to all these planets throughout the galaxy to basically, he's telling him he wants to know what it's like to be mortal and to see walk amongst the humans. But he has a sinister plot, doesn't he, John?
Yes, he does, Mitch.
He's not just Ego the living planet. In essence, he wants to be Ego the living universe. That's my takeaway from it.
And there was something I noticed. Like, they didn't show any Thanos in this movie. And I think the reason being is Ego is so much more powerful than Thanos is. And like, obviously when Thanos gets the gems, he's the most powerful thing in the universe, whatever. But I mean, he pales in comparison to the power of Ego. And I was thinking that while I was watching the movie. I was like, Jesus, Ego is so powerful because he's this planet, this god. And I said, if they show Thanos, I really was thinking this. If they show Thanos, it's going to kind of, like, devalue his threat. And they never show him, and I think it's because of that.
Well, you got to remember, too, when it comes to Thanos, I was always a little bizarre how powerful was he, because in the comics, he's the son of the guy from Titan. I can't think of his name right now. The planet Titan is a moon around Jupiter. And who was his father? I can't remember. His gray-haired guy. It was basically, yeah. What was it, Allfather, maybe?
Yeah, I can't remember. And his brother wasn't it Star Fox?
Star Fox is his brother, and they always refer to him as the Mad Titan, okay?
Yeah, right.
And basically, and there's actually a story that came out a couple years ago that tells his origins when he was a little kid, and he was a scientist, and all that. All I remember about Thanos from the comics was he was this big Hulk-like character, not stupid, but very smart, purple with a weird chin like a Skrull. And he was in love with death, and death being the embodiment of, you know, the ultimate annihilation of the universe. Somehow he had a hard on for her, and he wanted.
I think that's what made Thanos. I'm not a big Thanos fan. I'm more of a Dark Side fan, but yeah, he was obsessed with death, and just to like impress her, he's immortal because she barred him. He wanted to die to be with her, but she barred him from the realm of death, so he's basically immortal. But he kills all this stuff. It's just to, like, please her. It's almost
he's trying to impress her.
Like a peacock would be showing its feathers. He's doing that in a total genocidal, maniacal way.
Yeah. It's really a bizarre story. I mean, I don't know how they came up with it. So anyway, that's the story of Thanos. And then along the way, he comes across the Infinity Gems Infinity Stones in the Marvel Comics, because once he has all six of them, and each one controls a different element, one is time, one is space, one is the power, and the Marvel movies have been adapting this for the last 10 years now, and we're going to see the culmination of it next year. But that's a story, again, by George Perez, who will also be at Terrificon, and Ron Lim, who will also be at Terrificon, and that's the story about how Thanos gets the gauntlet and takes over the world and Adam Warlock. So we're getting a little ahead of ourselves. But Ego finds Peter Quill, his son, Star-Lord, and he needs him because what Ego wants to do is, when he was going around the galaxy putting these women or impregnating them, he was trying to have an offspring, because we find out that he is part celestial, one of the oldest beings in the galaxy, in the Marvel Universe, and he wants to control the entire universe, but he can't do it alone. He needs an offspring. He needs a son or a daughter, and so far, all the children that he has spawned, none of them have been able to survive the bonding between Ego and their mothers, except for Peter Quill's mother, Star-Lord's mom, and he is the only person ever to survive, to grow up to adulthood. So now his dad has come back to find him, to use him for his sinister plot to change the entire universe or galaxy into one giant Ego. But we have Yondu Udonta, who's the blue-skinned guy from the original Guardians of the Galaxy in the comics with the red fin on his head that had the bow and arrow in the comics, and in the movie he whistles and he has this magic arrow. He did not deliver Star-Lord to the father because he figured out what he was up to, and he held on to Star-Lord, raised him as his own as a pirate, basically fell in love with the kid, and he was his adopted dad. So there's a big storyline going through this movie about fathers and sons. Did you pick up on that, John?
I'm Mary Poppins, y'all! I mean, come on. It was fantastic. I love how they incorporated the fin, the Yondu's, like, the real fin from the comics, how they put that in there. I thought that was genius. I loved how they... Don't forget, we saw the Ravagers, the original Ravagers, which Starhawk was Mr. Sylvester Stallone
played Starhawk, yep.
And then what was the glassy one, the glass guy?
Martin X, he was played by, of all things, Michael Rosenbaum, who was Lex Luthor on the Smallville TV show.
And did you know Miley Cyrus was there, too?
Where?
She was one of the original, I found that out today. She was one of the original Ravagers. Now, there's two girls in there. And the girl with the shirt, there was two girls, and the one with the shirt.
Yeah, one's Alita, I can't think of her name. She was played by actress Michelle Yeoh. At the very end of the movie, they showed her at the funeral scene.
Right, and the other girl that's there is Miley Cyrus.
Oh, I did not know that. And did you notice that the snake-like creature, I can't think of his name, becomes the master of the mystic arts in the future? He's the Doctor Strange of the future.
Oh, yeah. Wasn't he in the Guardians of the Galaxy, that series,
though? Yeah, in the 90s he was in there. I can't think of his name. No, that's why if you look at the end of the movie, he does something with his hands and he makes one of those little, like, magical shields that Doctor Strange had.
Correct.
Yeah, but I can't think of his name right now.
I love him. And I love how, like, even Sylvester, if you look at the Starhawk character, he kind of had those on the side of him, like on his shoulders, those kind of strap things.
Yeah. The on his shoulders, those big bands that Starhawk would have.
What I'm loving about Guardians of the Galaxy is that you can tell, first off, you can tell Gunn is a fan, but he has options to throw so many of these characters. Like, we got the Watchers, we got them, you know, you got so many of the characters, Howard the Duck, you got, and they're all in there. You have the Celestials in the first one, I mean, Ego, I mean, it's just incredible, like, how much, and I don't know if you know this, but in the first one, he wanted to throw the Shi'ar in there, but he couldn't, because the Shi'ar is part of the licensing with
X-Men and Fox. Yeah. No, I didn't know that.
But that's what I love, like, you get so many elements of the Marvel Universe that's just, like, so outlandish. And that's what made it so fun for me. It was like, it was really like looking, well, I told Roy this, it was like reading a 1960s comic book. Like, it was a little campy, a little cheesy, but so entertaining. And that's what I got out of it. It was like, I'm telling you, it's like looking at those old Tales to Astonishes, or those early Fantastic Fours, and you're just looking at those when I was a kid. And you're just like, what the hell am I looking at? It was just,
well, you know what really gets me about that is there are so many. See, you and I can go to the film, and we know so much of the Marvel history that there's layers and layers of stuff that we could take apart and see. And I feel bad because I'll take my son, who doesn't know all the. Obviously, he's 17. He's not going to know all the decades of Marvel history like you and I. But I try to explain to him when we get in the car after the movie, oh, you see, those were the original Guardians, and that was Starhawk, and this one was Charlie 27. And he's looking at me like I might as well be rattling off old baseball players from the 50s that he's never saw, you know? Because it's like, what the hell, Dad? I just saw a movie about a guy who was a living planet and his son and on and on and on. But
yeah, in the comics, Ego has nothing to do with Star-Lord.
Oh, I mean, God, no. Ego was in a Thor comic, issue 132 and 133, and then he comes back and battles Galactus, also in Thor. Remember that?
Yeah. They were even. And that's when Thor had to help generate Galactus with Mjolnir. I don't know if you remember that.
All I know is I don't know what the status is of Ego at the moment. I thought at one point he had died.
What, in the comic books?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. I couldn't tell you that.
But the fact that we're even having a movie that has Ego, the living planet, in it is just amazing to me, because as an old-time...
Ego, the living planet, yes, in a movie is crazy, but to be done well, that's even more crazy.
Oh, and the best thing about it... So anyway, we're getting all over the place. So we're watching the movie. They go to the planet. Everybody seems to have a scene. You have Mantis in it, which is another character created by Steve Englehart, who will be appearing at Terrific Con this August 18th to the 20th. Now Mantis was a character that first appeared in Avengers, I'm going to say 113.
Close to there.
Yeah, and she was this always a bizarre character in the comics. She had antenna. She had this yellow and green outfit like a bathing suit. She could kick ass and do kung fu. I've heard stories about her being based on a prostitute from Vietnam. Other things. Now, in the movie, she's empathic. She gets to feel people's emotions by touching them, and she's pretty much this clueless character who was raised on the planet Ego, never interact with anybody, so she's kind of dim-witted, and they play that off. Her and Drax, they're kind of like the dumbest people in the film, and they manage to hook up and be buddies with each other. So there's a lot of humor in there.
Which was so great.
Now, that Drax the Destroyer is not the one that originally... The original Drax the Destroyer, who appeared, of all things, with Thanos in Iron Man 55, which goes for how much, John?
Oh, that can get to $1,000, even more. The higher grade one can really hit
that. Now, originally, he was not this big, dumb, lumbering Hulk. That happened after he died, and then he came back, and they made him like...
I thought he was really cool. He was an android, I think. That's what.
Yeah, the original one. No, he was something about he was human, and then he died, and then they took him and they transformed him into this creature.
But he was going after Thanos. His mission was to kill Thanos.
Yeah, correct.
And stuff. Yeah.
And, but then when they reinvented him, they made him stupid when he was in that Silver Surfer series.
Yeah, okay, and what happened, let me explain. Jim Starlin was not a fan of the merged Hulk that was all the rage of the 90s. And
by Peter David, right?
Yeah, and I hate Peter David because of that. I mean, I'm
Peter David, who will also be appearing at Terrificon this August 18th to the 20th.
Yeah, I think, I know people love him as a, which he did, he's a fantastic writer, I won't take that away from him, but the thing that he did with the Hulk for 11 years was horrendous. The multiple personality disorder. Anyways, he made him the Professor Hulk, and which was basically a smart Hulk, whatever. He was weak and he cried. But Stalin didn't like that, so when they resurrected Drax, Drax actually had the power gem. He swallowed it. So he was like a dim-witted, big, strong guy that he could get madder and stronger because he could, he subconsciously was generating power, of siphoning power from the gem, not even knowing it. So he was basically like the Hulk. Drax smash, Drax this. And that's basically what he was, became a cosmic Hulk, savage Hulk. That's the reason, yeah. And then that was pretty lame too, though.
So, well, anyway, back to, and then he was reinvented again by Keith Giffen in the book Annihilation.
He died again, I think. Correct? I think he died again.
He died
and
again.
In Annihilation.
He died Annihilation. In Annihilation. He comes back. He's drawn. Now he's no longer wearing the purple and green outfit. He was green skin with the purple spandex. Kind of looked like Martian Manhunter from the earlier DC line. But now he shows up with just bare-chested with tattoos all over his body with daggers. That look was created by artist Mitchell Breitweiser, who was at last year's Terrificon. See, I only get the best of the best. And I'm going to stop for 1 second. I know we're doing a podcast. I know we're doing Guardians of the Galaxy. But I got to tell you, as a comic book fan, if I wasn't doing my own show, I would go to it because it is the best goddamn show when it comes to comic books and creators and artists. You can have your movie stars. You can have your Charlie Sheens at Wizards.
Adam,
you
can... Amen. Preach, Mitch. Preach.
No, I'm serious, God. I am so sick. I am so sick of going to these shows and, oh, great, Tallulah Bankhead's here. And, oh, you can spend $1,000 for Tallulah Bankhead's autograph. Nobody knows who Tallulah Bankhead is. She was the glorious Swanson of the day. I was frozen in a block of ice, okay? I'm old school, okay? Bullshit. All right, kids? Bullshit. That's right. Quote me on it. Mitch Hyatt, the promoter. Put it in all the headlines. Promoter goes crazy. I'm telling you the truth, kids. If you're a Marvel file, if you're a comic book fan, go to the show that has the creators. These are the guys that made all those goddamn characters that you see on the screens that are making $1 billion. If it wasn't for Starlin, if it wasn't for Engelhardt, if it wasn't for Ron Lim or Roy Thomas, we would be watching Fast and Furious movies and crap like that. Screw that. I want comic books. I go to a comic con, okay? That's what it's called. That's what they're about. Mine's the Terrific one. It's called Terrific Con. Buy your damn tickets now. Let's go back to the show, John. That was my preaching.
No, amen.
No, because every time you and I talk about another character, I go, that guy was at my show. That guy was at my show. That guy's coming to the show. This is what it's all about. You can go up to him and say, hey, Mr. Engelhardt, what were you thinking when you came up with Star-Lord? What were you thinking when you came up with Mantis? What's your reaction to the way he's portrayed on the big screen? What do you think about your creation making $1 billion at the box office? This is stuff that is amazing to me because these are the guys that they had no idea when they were making these characters in the 60s and the 70s that 30 to 40 to 50 years later, they would be the basis of $1 billion movie franchise. You got to admit that's overwhelming.
You're not Mitch, but I digress. All right, Mitch, let's go back.
No, I got to ask. It's one who speaks to Roy Thomas. I'm going to go off on a tangent here. What does Roy Thomas ever say to you about how he sees the Avengers, how he sees the Vision, how he sees Ultron? Has he ever said he's in awe of all these things that have happened?
You know what he actually said? He said, if I knew it was going to make so much money and all that, he goes, I would have created more characters.
Real, and Roy has got a plethora of characters. He is a mess. What if you counted all the characters that he's created that have made their way onto other medium, he, what, 40, 50 maybe?
I'll say this. I don't know if there's anybody other than Stan Lee and Jack Kirby that has created more enduring characters cumulatively than than Roy. I mean,
he's prolific. I mean, let's just say that. The man is prolific. Next to Stan Lee.
There's other guys that have big characters, but not as many as Roy.
That's what I was going to say. Next to Stan Lee and Kirby, I'd say Roy's third, wouldn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. You cannot deny it. I mean, let's just throw Wolverine into the mix, and he's just as big as Spider-Man, Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman.
And plus, behind-the-scenes stuff, too. Roy was integral as an editor for giving the go-ahead to many of the creations that we see when it comes to the new X-Men.
And I'm going to put this on record again, Mitch, because Roy is very humble, and he actually co-created a lot more characters than people think and wrote a lot more stories than people think, and he never took credit for it because he's not like that. But so I'm just going to throw that out there. So he was very big into the scenes of what was going on at Marvel.
All right, so, okay, go back to the Guardians. So we have this whole thing. Star-Lord, his dad, Star-Lord's dad is trying to take over the universe. And what we find out is that he was in love with Star-Lord's mother when he came to the Earth, but the only way he could continue with his mission, which is called the Expanse, that's what he's calling it. And I got to admit, again, this is something, the word ego meaning self-love. It means, you know, it's basically being like me. You think you're the number one guy in the whole world. That's me. That's my egomaniac. But the fact that this guy was so in love with himself and so selfish that he thought the world or the universe should be designed in his image and mind is amazing, that the name goes along with what his ultimate plan is. And you just got to tip the hat to whoever thought of the name back in the day, Stan Lee, Kirby, whoever it was. Or Roy, or whoever was there. It's amazing to me how it all ties in. So basically, he wants to take over the world. He finds this out. Star-Lord tries to stop him, but he slips up by saying he had to kill his mother. He had to put the brain tumor in her head that ultimately killed her, because he was so in love with her that if she continued to live, he would have given up his plans and stayed on the Earth with her forever and given up his godlike powers. So Star-Lord loses it, goes crazy because he loved his mama. He's a mama's boy. And then the fight ensues. And then we have a lot of stuff going on. And we have Yondu, who the surrogate dad. There's a great bunch of sequences in there where he and Rocket have to escape his mutinous crew that was led by Taserface, who we already said is coming to the show. And he's aided by his former first mate, Kraglin, played by Sean Gunn, who's the youngest brother of James Gunn, the writer and director of these films. Sean Gunn, who will also be appearing at Terrificon this August 18th to the 20th, has a great role in this film. He becomes a turncoat and he helps out his former captain. So they show up to rescue everybody. We forgot to mention Nebula, who was also a daughter of Gamora, or Gamora's sister, Thanos' stepdaughter. They have a big fight between the two of them. There's a lot going on in this movie. It's 2 hours and 15 minutes, and there's so much happening. There's even another cameo by Stan Lee and the Watchers, which is hysterical. Right?
They actually walk off because he was telling too many stories.
They must be. It's like they're listening to the Power Cosmic podcast. They just turn it off.
I know, exactly.
Other than Scott Martin, who's our Uatu, the rest of the people turn this shit off. So
we got passion. We got hot, Mitch.
Ratings have been going up. Last week they were higher. I don't know what's happening. They haven't been this high since you had the Roy Thomas legendary first ever Spider-Man suit way back in March.
Well, if I can throw something out there, I'm actually doing a private signing with Roy this weekend, and I'm going down to South Carolina. And just so people know, whoever's listening, I'll be going live with Roy at his house. On my Facebook page, John Cimino, my Facebook page. So friend me if you want, and you can watch us live there. And then eventually
what about the Roy Thomas Appreciation fan page?
Yeah, I'll put it on there after, because I can't go live on the Roy Thomas Appreciation Board, but I'll put that on there. So if you have any questions, we're probably going to go live around 5 or 6, so that's we're probably an hour behind Eastern time, so you're talking about maybe 7 o'clock. So if you're on, look at my page. If you're on Facebook, just check it out. It's always fun to see Roy talk, and you can ask him whatever you want. And it'll be live at the Roy Thomas homestead.
Yeah, well, there you go, with the llamas in the background. He owns llamas. So anyway, back to the movie. A big fight ensues. A lot of things happen. Spoiler alert, Yondu sacrifices himself at the very end to save Peter Quill, a.k.a. Star-Lord, And there's a huge funeral scene at the end. And then Starhawk, who abandoned Yondu because of what he did, and there's a whole backstory, they accept him again in death, say it, John. After he died. So anyway, posthumously, thank you. They have this big scene, and it ends on a downer. Would you say it was a downer or an upbeat ending?
Yeah. You know, being a dad, and I do the best I can for my daughter, and you know how serious I take that role. But, like, the fact that he says, you know, he may be your father, but he ain't your daddy, and then I get a little choked up thinking about that. Like, it really was touching. So that's what I'm saying. You got this movie that had so much entertaining, so many laughs, but it had heart. It had such heart to it.
Yeah.
It was so, and that's what a lot of comedies don't have, that kind of soul and depth to it. You know, it could be really funny, it could be action packed, but it was very touching to me.
I tell you what, and I gotta say this, I didn't plan on this happening when I first saw it last Thursday. Unfortunately, I lost one of my best friends like the day before at age 46, right. Mr. Dan Yance. So it was really an emotional movie-going experience. I saw it with our good pal Jerry Ordway, and we have been going to movies, my friend Dan and I, for at least 20 years. He was a big Star Trek fan, science fiction, comic books, just like us, nerd like you wouldn't believe. And he would go to all the midnight shows with me. We would go look for toys. He would work the comic cons with me. He would always be like security or line control. So I had bought him his ticket because the poor kid had lost his job a couple months ago. So he was unemployed and he was worried about health care because he didn't have any insurance and he wasn't feeling well for the last month on and off. And like I said to people, if you don't feel good, they can't refuse you help. Don't sit there and think you can't go to a doctor or a walk-in clinic. They have to treat you. They cannot not treat you. They can't turn you away. So don't think you can't get help. So the poor kid thought he would sweat it out. I don't know what happened. He called me last Tuesday, wasn't feeling well, was texting me. His ankle was swollen. He didn't know what was happening. The next day, the neighbors came to knock at the door to see, check on him, and they found poor Dan on the floor. He died. Wow. Not a way to go. 46, alone. That's not the way you're supposed to die. So I go to see this movie. I had his ticket in my pocket because I bought it ahead of time. So I'm watching the movie with Ordway. And at the end of the movie, when they have the funeral scene, they're playing this song by Cat Stevens called Dad and Son. Yeah. And the lyrics are, "Sorry, I have to go away." And, you know, they cremate Yondu and his ashes go out into space and become this sparkly thing. So it's very emotional to be watching a fictional character on screen say goodbye to their friends and knowing this has happened to me. So I was really torn at the end. I was really upset watching this movie. Not because the movie makers knew what was going to happen to me, but I walked in there with this happening within, you know, 12 hours of seeing the movie. So I'll always remember this movie as that. You know how you have certain things that happen in your life, a song, a TV show, a movie, that you can remember where you were when you watched it and what was going on in your life? So Guardians of the Galaxy 2 will always be there. But it is such a good movie, like you said, because it works on so many levels. You and I are both fathers. We have kids, so we understood that element. Little kids in the movie loved it because it had Groot and Rocket Raccoon. So they're laughing about that. They've got a romance going on, and they call it like the Cheers, Sam and Diane thing between Star-Lord and Gamora, where they're not, you know.
It's all, and Mitch, just
what?
Like all those one-liner things, like they're talking about Cheers and like how they do that. Like Footloose was in the first one.
Oh, my God,
like,
David Hasselhoff is in this movie.
Yes, oh, my God. It's stuff like that, but it's done well. That could so easily. Now,
It could be a shitty parody movie. It could be a real.
Oh, my God. Crap. It could be so bad. And think about it. You got these F-rated characters, D-rated characters that, like, we care about. They're saying these cliche sometimes and funny and stupid jokes, but we laugh. That takes a lot of genius.
No, it takes a lot of. That's what I'm saying. In the wrong hands, this movie is a 2.5-hour waste of time. And it's you don't want to be there. But they do.
Yeah.
Marvel is so, I don't know. I mean, I can't say they're lucky. I mean, because no one has that kind of luck. Nobody. For 15 times. But they have such care and craftsmanship. that they put these movies together, and even when they're a little long-winded, like Avengers 2, Age of Ultron, which is not my favorite, they're still entertaining. You know, I'll still watch Avengers 2 and find parts of that I really like, even though I thought overall the movie could have been cut by about 20 minutes. But
Mitch, let me just throw this at you, and I totally agree. And I was watching a YouTube video yesterday on the depth. Now, look at this. They have the Marvel catalog doesn't just have superheroes. They have the Rawhide Kid, Two Gun Kid. They could make. They're gonna eventually be making westerns. Like
they had those characters already in Agent Carter. They showed them.
Okay, but and then you also have romance comics. I mean, they could make love stories. I'm just saying.
For God's sakes, they have the Night Nurse, and she's already in the movies.
That's what I'm saying. It's just unbelievable what they can do. They don't even have to go the superhero route anymore. And if they have these writers that understand the comic books and the heart and soul of the character. They haven't went wrong yet, and I don't see it going wrong anytime soon.
No, and like I was at a comic shop with Jerry last week or 2 weeks ago, and we were going through tons of old long boxes, and I'm finding books like The Night Nurse, Omega, which is a Steve Gerber character we talked about. There's so many of these third-tier, D-class heroes that Marvel has a catalog of that they haven't touched that you're right. They could... I hope we lived forever because they're never going to stop with these things.
No, and look, another thing, Howard the Duck makes an appearance. They tried Howard the Duck back in the 80s when they were like when they tried to make Howard something that he wasn't. You know, like that movie was a bomb. Now, why is Howard the Duck so awesome? He's this ugly duck trying to pick up the girls and stuff. It's fantastic.
He's the foul equivalent to a Stan Lee now. So if something happens to Stan, Howard will be in it. And then, I don't know about where you saw your thing, but when I saw mine, they showed the previews for Thor Ragnarok, which you already talked about. And now I can't wait to go see that. I mean, again, Thor was a character as a kid. That would be on the bottom of the pile, okay? Right before Submariner and Doctor Strange. You didn't want to read Thor, thou, yost, and thee, that. It sucked, you know? But not now. I can't wait to see Thor. And I was going to ask you, have the prices on those old books like Defenders number 10 or Thor, I believe it's 113 when he fights the Hulk, Journey into Mystery, have the price...
112, Mitch. 112.
I was close. Have they gone up on prices?
Of course. Those are always the classes. And Defenders, classics. Defenders 10 is the other one. The Hulk 255 kind of saw a little bit of action. That's what Sal Buscema and Bill Mantlo wrote that one. Thunder Under the East River, which is awesome, which is a Hulk vs. Thor battle from the 80s. It was one of the last classic Hulk and Thor fights. Those are always, that 112 is always a big deal. But yes, of course, generating, it's always, now that Hulk vs. Thor, and I think it's the greatest fight in comics. It's definitely the most popular.
Oh, see, I always think of Hulk versus Thing, but then I realize that actually Hulk versus Thor is, that's up there.
That's from the old days. That hasn't happened in so many years. But see, the difference was, Hulk always beat up the Thing, and it was how long could the Thing hang with the Hulk. Thor was always, you know, created to be just as powerful. Like, you know, obviously the Hulk is stronger, Thor's got the hammer that makes up the difference, but, like, they have that rivalry that is legendary in the Marvel Universe. So it was always a little more interesting than Hulk and Thing. But now it's become the biggest. The only other rivalry that can match that, but not anymore, is Superman vs. Captain Marvel, because that kind of went out the way back in the, you know, that was huge because of the litigation stuff, but that was a rivalry that was big for many, many years, and I'm sure Jerry Ordway would attest to that. But Hulk vs. Thor, nothing can touch that rivalry. That is, and now they're going to showcase it in Ragnarok.
And now, as a Hulk fan, like everybody listening to this show knows you are, Mr. Elastic Hulk, who do you think would really win, or if there is ever a winner between the Hulk versus Thor?
Are we talking about the Hulk today versus the Thor today, or the
back in the day, back in the 60s and the 70s?
So back in the day, that was the big deal. It was they were even. That's why that was the big thing, the god versus the monster. And the reason being is when Hulk the readership was always sending mail to the Stan Lee, to the Marvel bullpen, asking who was stronger, Hulk versus Thing. And when the Thing got beaten by the Hulk in issue 25 and 26 of the Fantastic Four, then it was always like, well, who's stronger, dwarf the Hulk now, and that became the big thing. And Stan Lee always making them end in a draw, you know, just to keep going. So if you're going to go in the classic Silver Age, they were even. They were dead even. That's the way it was supposed to be. But today, it's a lot different. The Hulk is a lot different character, and the Hulk would beat him today.
Oh, okay. So you say. Because then there's the whole God immortal thing going into play.
No. But it already happened. And in 2010, the Hulk beat him up, and he got the really first definitive win of all time. Now, they kind of went back and forth in the annual back in 2001, the Hulk Thor annual. But in 2010, it was actually Rob Schneider, the singer of Twisted Sister's son, who was writing for comics for a few times. He writes for DC, I think, now. I forget his name, but his father was always into the Thor, and he was always into the Hulk when he was a kid. And so when he had them fight, he had Thor win just to kind of like play with his father. But I mean, excuse me, Hulk win, and just to kind of throw a little joke at his father. So I mean, it actually happened. But you know, I go for the Silver Age stuff. The stuff that happens today, meh.
Yeah, anyway, well, we'll get to see that fight. You know they're going to end up teaming up and being buddies, but...
Yeah, it's going to be funny. They're going to go back and forth, and I think they're going to... People are wondering, is Thor going to beat the Hulk? I don't think any of them is going to win, because you want to devalue any of them, and they're going to team up to fight, and they're going to fight the forces of Hela.
And I think this is the last one we see before the big grand finale, Avengers Infinity War, next year.
Well, which is going to be a two-parter.
Well, no, I heard now it's a one-parter. It was going to be two parts, but they put it down to one.
I did see, just to throw this out there, I did see the filming of that, and I saw Vision and Scarlet Witch kissing.
Yep.
There was a thing, and I knew that was going to come because of, in the Avengers one, you saw them in, they're kind of getting close when they were at Stark's tower.
And then after that, it's all out the window because we got Black Panther, and then I think we get Ms. Marvel. And Ant-Man and Wasp, that's filming right now as we speak. It's all over the place.
There's Roy's character coming out, like in full force, Captain Marvel. That's going to be great.
Yeah, and then, but I don't think, the big ones are gone then. There's no more Iron Man, no more Cap, Thor, Hulk.
Well, because eventually they're going to have to phase out those characters. Those actors are getting older, and I'm sure they'll make some appearances and stuff, but they have to generate new characters, and it's going to be interesting these next few years. Now, Mitch, let me ask you really quickly: when did you find out that the Avengers was now only one?
That was like about 6-7 months ago. They combined it, and originally it was supposed to be May, and then come out part two 6 months later in November. But I read that the Russo brothers, who worked on Winter Soldier and Civil War, they're the directors of the movie. They put it down to one.
So is it going to be like a three-hour movie?
I don't know. It's got to be long. I mean, because you're going to have... You thought there was a lot of characters in Civil War and Guardians too. There's going to be all of them. Everyone's in that movie.
It's going to be great. And I think even some of the ones that are on TV.
I don't know. I did see a trailer at one theater besides Terrificon's trailer for The Inhumans. Did you see that at your theater?
What's the Terrificon trailer?
No. That's only playing in Connecticut. No, they showed the trailer for Inhumans, the new TV show.
No, I didn't see that.
It's going to be in the movie theaters in September, and then it goes right on to TV. So the premiere...
it's going to be in the theater?
The premiere episode is going to be in theaters for like a week, and then it goes right to TV like S.H.I.E.L.D. every week.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So,
that's interesting.
They showed it in my theater.
And Mitch, let me just throw this out there that I can't stand. I hear so many people, they just see a picture of it, and so many people complain.
Oh, about Medusa?
Whatever. Just watch it. Then they can. People were complaining when Robert Downey Jr. back in the day.
They used to complain about Tim Burton picking Michael Keaton as Batman. Remember that?
Yeah, but I was with Keith Gleason, and I said, no, it's going to be awesome. He was going to be me. And now he's the pride and joy of friggin' Marvel. And it's like, give it a breath.
Well, Chris Pratt was this chubby guy from a TV show on NBC.
He's a comedian.
Yeah, no, I never watched it, but now he's like a box office, Jurassic World. He's got these movies now. He's like a big leading man, They know what they're doing.
And to throw a DC out there, I saw the trailer for Wonder Woman. I think that looks great.
Yeah. Yeah, I just don't like World War One movies. It's like it never really.
But they have to establish her. I understand they have to establish her, who she is and stuff. But you know what? I think it's going to be good, Mitch. I know what you're talking about.
All right, no. I'll be there. I mean, I have no choice. I'll be there. I'm trying to think. Was there any miscasting in any of the Marvel movies? Have I thought of any? Quicksilver was kind of annoying.
Yes. It's funny you say that.
That's the only one that comes to my mind right away. I was like, oh, Quicksilver, yeah. I didn't like that.
Yeah, it's funny. Like I said, I was talking about my daughter with this, and I was saying, I like the Quicksilver from the X-Men one better. Even
oh, he's much funnier, yeah.
Yeah, funnier, though, yeah.
Well, see, here's the difference. Quicksilver in the comics was always a dick. I never liked Quicksilver.
But wait, do you know why he was addicted?
Yeah, because he was trying to get Crystal from Johnny Storm, and I was like, screw you.
Not just that, he was impatient, impetuous, because everything was slow to him.
Yeah.
He's so fast, and it's just like when sometimes, you know, you're talking, and I'm talking, and you're talking to me, and my eyes roll, and it's just like, yeah, get it out. But that's how he is, because everything is so slow, and I thought that was so cool, how that's why he's so impetuous. But yes, he is a dick, he is arrogant, and he is all that, but everything is slow to him, so he is that.
You know
but
which
yes.
characters I can't believe we haven't seen yet on the screen? I thought we would see, and here's another one I never cared for in the Marvel. Let's get on with the ones we never liked, but I'm sure they'll show up. Wonder Man. You know Wonder Man with the glasses and the red jacket? Huh?
He was always kind of a loser, always doubting himself. Yeah, I was never big into that.
No, I never understood the attraction, because then they reinvented him. Remember, first he had that brown suit. And then he had that red jacket.
First he had the green suit.
Oh, green suit. I'm sorry. Yeah, when
Avengers
he first...
Number nine. I think it was Avengers number nine.
In the Avengers. I always thought that was a lame character. I was like, what the hell? And then he had that Hollywood look.
Yeah, right. But I think the part of it was maybe the method behind Stan Lee is they had Wonder Woman get Wonder Man. You know?
Oh, yeah. Maybe. I never put that together, but yeah. But that's a character. If they make that in a movie, I'll be like, you got to be kidding me, because I hate that character.
I mean, think about it. There's a lot of characters that I'm not really too big of, but like
they got Mantis in it. I like Mantis now on the screen. I don't like her in the comics.
I could care less about any of those Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, Gamora? Ugh. Yeah.
Pick a group from Tales to Astonish 13, from a group from Planet X, whatever we're from. It's just like, what the hell is that character? He's one
now, how much does that book go for? $1,000? How much is that? $1,000?
I just sold one for $1,400, a 3.0 for $1,400
Jesus.
The other day.
Now, that's a lot of money, because it's just hard. They weren't making a lot of monster books, right?
No, yeah, those are the pre superheroes. But once again, it's like, who would have ever thought that Rocket Raccoon, that Hulk from Hulk
271.
I hated fuzzy animals.
And how much is that for, John?
That goes for about $200-$250.
And I told you I had three copies of it. I don't know why I had three copies of it. And when I was and I threw them away because Al Milgram did the cover of the worst Hulk in the history of comics. That image.
And you're looking at that, and it's just like this horrible character.
Oh yeah, yeah.
But now we relish in that. Unbelievable, Mitch.
And the first Star-Lord, and he appears in the magazine. Marvel Premiere. What? How much is that? I just picked it up.
Oh, the Adam Warlock, right?
No. Marvel Premiere, first Star-Lord magazine. $200.
But I was thinking of Marvel Premiere number one is first Adam Warlock.
Oh, God. Did that just shoot up in value?
Oh, of course that's going to go up. And I called Roy, obviously, right when they said Adam, and I sent him I took a picture, and I said, check this out. And I texted him the cocoon, and he said that, he goes, oh, that's not my character. He goes, and I go, and I said that he wasn't in the credits. And he said, well, that's not my character. He goes, that's Stan Lee and Jack Kirby's. I go, yeah, but they say Adam. He goes, oh, they did. I said, yeah. I said, well, you should be getting credits in the next one.
Well, all I know is whenever these characters come to movies, do you guys that sell comics, do you know ahead of time? Do you watch the movies come out and then you go and get those books? Because a lot of books I've been finding in the quarter bins are worth hundreds of dollars right now.
Yeah, because people look for any little thing now. Now it's like, that's the thing. Comics can shoot up from $1 now.
I just bought the first appearance of Moon Knight, Werewolf by Night, issue 28.
Yeah, when did you get that, Mitch? That book is ridiculous.
That was my mailman. My Willie Lumpkin just was at the door delivering me comics as we speak. Where did I get it? Actually, I got to tell you. A guy got divorced, and he had a bunch of books, and he had to sell them off. And the dealer that he went to knows me, and he knows that I'm always looking for these books. And he said, hey, I got a great copy of it, and I know you're a huge Moon Knight fan. Would you like it? And I said, absolutely. So that's how I got a copy of it.
Wow, I have a few copies, and my cheapest one's $1,000.
Oh, get out.
Oh, yes, that book is crazy.
And but have they announced that they're making a movie about this guy yet or not?
I think he's going to be a Netflix.
Are you sure? Because Cloak and Dagger, I just saw the trailer for that one, and that's one of my favorites, too. That's
shot up like a rocket.
Peter Parker, Spectacular Spider-Man, issue 55 or 56?
54, I think it is. Is it one of those? One of those, though, Mitch.
And again, ready for this? Bill Mantlo created.
Yeah, and who would have ever thought those characters would have been any?
And Rick Leonardi, who I was talking to about coming to my show. He was the artist on it. But is their series worth anything?
Which one?
They had a Cloak and Dagger miniseries. How's that going?
Well, their stuff is going, but obviously the first appearance is going to be the biggest one, but all that stuff.
Yeah, but even minor characters, because I'm looking for an Iron Fist issue number 19 at the moment. Do you know why?
Why?
Because that's the first appearance of Colleen Wing, who was on the Iron Fist TV show, and the actress that played her is coming to Terrificon, Jessica Henwick, and I wanted to get her to sign it, so...
Yeah.
How much is that book? Not a lot?
No, I'm sure it's like a $50 book. And you know what I sold just this weekend was the first appearance of Shang-Chi, the 15 and 16. Those the Marvel special editions. Because I think he's going to eventually be in the Netflix one. They're going to go to him too.
Wait a minute. Didn't he first appear in one of the magazines?
No. See, I used to think it was that one. No, the Deadly Hands of Kung Fu.
Yeah, that's why I always thought his first appearance.
No, 15 and 16 of Marvel Special Edition. Those were, I just sold those. Like I said, those are $100 books now where they weren't worth anything. All those things are going up.
Well, I got to tell you, we're taking a long time today, and I don't give a rat's ass. You got to go somewhere?
No, I'm having fun.
No, I know, because I'm going to say we're going long on the Power Cosmic, so what the hell. As I'm speaking to you, I just opened up. Somebody sent me a copy of Captain America: Secret Empire, number one. You know about this, how this whole storyline about Cap's been an agent of Hydra, right?
Yeah, but I heard people complaining.
Oh, there's idiots burning their comic books.
Yeah, and it's just like, dude, it's just a freaking story. Trying
to make... Look, I hate the internet. The internet... Well, the World Wide Web has given you and I the advantages of talking on this conversation and... posting it. So the internet has its pluses. That and, you know, you can shop for eBay and all that stuff. But these idiots that go out there and, you know, just want to get headlines, give me a break.
And it's just a fake, fictional character.
Yeah, why would you... Oh, no! Okay, here's the argument I've heard, okay? That Jack Kirby and Joe Simon, both being of Jewish heritage... created Captain America, and now that they've created this new Cap, who's a Hydra agent, and Hydra's basically an offshoot of the Nazis, it's an insult to these two creators who are Jewish, obviously of the whole World War II Nazi Jewish thing. I'm like, okay, we're talking about a story. We're talking about a fictitious character. There is no Steve Rogers. There is no Captain America. If Jack Kirby and Joe Simon were alive today and they told them they were making this story, they'd be like, okay, it's a story. Because we all know eventually Cap's going to...
They wouldn't even care.
He's going to go back to being the true American hero that we all know and love. It's just a story. That's all. If you want to grab headlines because you want to be famous for 15 minutes on the internet, go ahead, burn your comic books. But put it in perspective, people. It's just a comic book. It's not real life, all right?
And what's funny is, because everybody has a camera, everybody lives in their own little world of narcissism. Like, it's just like, they think it revolves around, like, they don't understand what's going on in the outside world. And, like, they just know what's going on with their immediate friends and how many likes they have. So they have that thing, that personal attachment to these characters, or this, whatever, however it represents their world. And it just drives me crazy because they think it's like affecting them in some way.
Look, I remember getting Howard. What are you going to say about Howard the Duck? Howard the Duck, number one, by Gene Colan, okay? The artwork. The magazine, the black and white magazine. That thing ended. I can't. It's got to be 1981 or so, or 80. It ended with a topless Beverly Switzer, or Switzer, that was his girlfriend, in bed, telling Howard to turn off the light because they were going to go to bed together. Okay? You saw her bare breasts in the book. I'm like 12, 13 going, oh my, look at this. If there was an internet then, and that appeared in the comics, there would be shouts of burn Marvel down to the ground for condoning bestiality. That's how ridiculous it would have been. It would have been, oh my God, there's a woman sleeping with a duck. They're telling people to have sex with animals. How can Marvel do this? This is a Disney company. They would be screaming. It would be on the news. It would be making the headlines.
You know what? I hate you're exactly right, but I'd hate to burst people's bubbles. But Steve Gerber was a weird guy, and Howard the Duck, he made Howard the Duck a woman slayer. He got all the girls, and he was sleeping with girls.
Well, that's why if you watch Guardians of the Galaxy, that's what he says when he's in the bar sequence. Real quick, he says like, "You're out of luck if you don't go duck." You know what I mean?
That's where Gunn gets it, but you're correct. Could you imagine that going on now, today?
Well, even in that movie back in 86 or 85 when they did the Howard the Duck movie, I remember the scene that has Leah Thompson in bed with Howard the Duck, and people were like, what the hell kind of movie is this? But that was based on the comic book.
Right, but yeah, it made people go, but the funny thing is, Mitch, it would have affected the world like it does today. Today is a different world.
I know. Right? Today, I don't know what it is today. I really don't. Now I sound like an old 50-year-old man because I don't get the kids nowadays. Sometimes I think people are just looking for an excuse to complain.
No, absolutely. It's just like, and people are looking for somebody. That's why people are so afraid that like to do something wrong, because people are like on the internet. They're just watching. They're waiting. They're like, they're scheming to like.
Well, actually, there's a show on HBO. I just saw that, or one of these shows coming on, where it shows behind the scenes stuff where they make up these what do you want to call them? These I don't want to say fake news because I sound like Donald Trump, but they make up these incidents. You know, they tell people to quick go on your Twitter account and complain about it and make it a headline, and it's almost like they manipulate. Remember the comic books when they had the hate monger?
Oh, yeah.
And he was this character that wore a hood, and he would go out there. And who was the guy that had the... you're going to know what it is.
It was a clone of Hitler, though.
He was a clone of Hitler. But who was the guy...
Psycho Man,
yes. He had the things on his chest which said, like, fear, hate, or something.
No, it wasn't on his chest. It's a gadget that he had. Fear and jealousy? Well, something
and he could basically turn up the... Yeah, he would turn the knob up. And he would suddenly, control masses of people, right?
Yeah, that's a Jack Kirby Stanley character, correct?
Yeah, but that's what it almost seems like. It seems like we live in a comic book world because there was these characters that can go out there and manipulate the emotions of crowds. Remember the Mad Bomb storyline from Captain America by Jack Kirby?
Yes, we're correct.
That's the whole story. I hated that book when it came out. I hated the story. I hated the artwork. But now I look back and I go, oh my God, I live in the Mad Bomb world. You know?
Jack Kirby lives again. You know what, Mitch? It's so true. And that's what's so funny. People just have to understand to lighten up, because why? I'm just happy that these characters are like people know about them.
Let me tell you, it's just entertainment. That's all it is. It's entertainment. It's a distraction. I had one of the nicest compliments paid to me the other day on Saturday. I was out there. I was promoting the Terrific Con at the comic shops. I was handing out flyers, selling tickets. And this woman wrote me a letter. She said she was a single mom, and she she tries to find something entertaining to do with her daughter, young girl. So she took her daughter to the show last year, and she heard the announcement said, meet one of the actors from The Walking Dead, and her young daughter was very upset because she's afraid of that TV show because, it's not meant for kids, and it's a scary idea when you're 4 or 5. So she went upstairs to the Kids Con, which is a thing we do every year where we have guys with puppets, and they teach kids how to draw and how to make their own comic books. She said they spent the day there. They had a wonderful time. And she said she just wanted to let me know that she appreciates that I put these shows on. And she said, as the director James Gunn from Guardians of the Galaxy just said, he realizes what they do is entertainment. And it's not this world-saving cure for cancer. It's not solving, you know, wars or anything like that. But what it does is it gives people a distraction from the darkness that's out there, from the dreariness, from the unemployment, from the death, from the starvation, you know, all the troubles of the world for a couple hours. You put that on hold and forget about all of that, and you have fun with your kid or your daughter or your son or your dog, and you just enjoy yourself. You know what I'm saying? And then...
Case in point, Mitch, that's why I love Guardians of the Galaxy.
Well, no, and then she said that that's what he was trying to make the point. He said, look, I understand I'm just a movie director, and I'm not like a doctor or anything like that, but the fact that these movies give people some distraction from, you know, what's going on out there, that's a big thing, and it gives people something to look forward to, you know?
Yeah, and just unfortunate that people, because they gravitate to these things so much now, it's like it becomes part of their life, so they think that Captain America is part of them. Like, you know, it's just like...
It's a shame that people just can't enjoy things for what they are, a distraction. That's all. That Captain America comic book, let me tell you, I'm looking at the books that just came in the mail I ordered, okay? I got the Captain America variant cover, because I like the artwork. I got a Marvel Team-Up Issue 8, Spider-Man and the Cat, Patsy Walker, okay? You know why I got this? Because I like Spider-Man Marvel Team-Ups, and I always wanted to have this one, so I went and got it. It's not a $1 million comic. It's something I'm going to read for about 20 minutes. And for 20 minutes, I'm going to remember what it was like to be a little kid, and I'm going to enjoy this Marvel team-up, and I'm going to enjoy the artwork and the story, and that's it. That's all. For 20 minutes, I'm not going to worry about paying my bills. You know, are my kids okay? Is there anything for dinner tonight? I'm just going to have a good time. And I'm not taking any drugs. I'm not drinking. I'm not abusing anybody. It's just entertainment. That's all. Lighten up, people.
Can't ask for anything more than that, Mitch.
That's what and I'm looking. You know who this book is written by? Jerry Conway. Jim Mooney is the artist. I'm looking at some of the stuff here. Roy Thomas is the editor. And it says, Peacemaker, Irv Forbush. There you go. What a classic book here. This came out in 1972. April. Yep, look at that. 20 cents for two measly dimes. You can enjoy, 28 pages back then? It was a good book, right?
No, but the simplicity of it all, just entertainment, man. That's all it is, entertainment.
Yeah, and I'm looking at, guess what came out that month? You ready? Spider-Man 119. What happens?
119? No, well, that's,
The Hulk.
The Hulk.
I'm just telling you, you want to talk about a great time for comics? People are bitching about the Hail Hydra storyline for Captain America. Look at this. We're talking this one Marvel checklist. Ready? Spider-Man 119, Spider-Man Met the Hulk. Drawn by what, John Romita?
Yeah, that was Romita and Kilcane.
Okay, over in the Fantastic Four, 132, the Thing was meeting Thundra. Heroes for Hire with Luke Cage meeting...
That's a real character, Thundra. One of my favorite female characters.
Okay, saying, here's what was going on that month. Heroes for Hire, Issue 8, Luke Cage meets Dr. Doom. All about that $200 he owed him, right?
Oh, he had to get, was it $100 or $200?
$200. Daredevil 98, The Man Without Fear and the Black Widow tackle the so-called Dark Messiah as the city quakes beneath their feet. There you go. Conan the Barbarian was being done by Roy Thomas, right?
Yeah.
Look at this. I wonder who this artist is. It says, a new artist, but the name of old greatness, which has made this award-winning mag what it is today. I wonder who the new artist was that took over with that issue.
I think, was it John, what number is it?
Issue 25.
Is it John Buscema?
Oh, okay. He took over for Barry Windsor Smith?
No, yeah, because Barry Windsor Smith left and he came back. I think he came back to issue 23 or 24. So, yeah.
All right, and here's what other great books were going on that month. Thor 210, Hulk 162. Captain America and the Falcon issue 160. The Cal.
Wait, Hulk 162. That was the first appearance of the Wendigo.
162 was?
Yeah, that's Steve Englehart and one of the best Hulk stories of all time, right there.
Wait, did Englehart create the Wendigo?
Yeah.
He was oh my God, I gotta go out and get that. Look at that.
Even tricking. That's a great. Mitch, that is one of the best Hulk stories of all time. Spawn of the Flesh Eater.
Okay.
It's a one issue. It's a one. Read that issue, and then you're going to have to tell me what you're
doing. All right, and let's see what else was going on. Ready for this? Iron Man 57, Mandarin Strikes Back. Two issues after the fabled Drax and Thanos premiered.
That was 55. Yeah. That was 55. 2 months
ago. Submariner issue 60. Warlock, issue 5. Adam Warlock, we forgot to mention, appears at the end of the Guardians of the Galaxy, going to be a big player, number 3. Or maybe in Infinity War, we don't know, because he was the one that killed Thanos.
Yeah, he's the one who gets that. So we'll
Why is Journey into Mystery 4 out? What was that all about? That must have been
reprints. There's a reprint.
Doc Savage, issue 4. Astonishing Tales, 17. Ready for this one? Marvel Spotlight number 9, The Ghost Rider versus The Witchman. Don't know what that is.
Ghost Rider just came out in number 5, so that's a few months later.
And we got Shanna the She-Devil number 3. She was always hot. She was hot, man. She ended up hooking up with Kazar, but boy, oh boy, I thought she was something else. Running around that leopard outfit. Oof. Supernatural Thrillers number 3, Combat Kelly number 6, Gunhawks, I don't even know what that is, number 4, Sergeant Fury was on 109, and you ready for this? Fear issue 13, The Man-Thing Shambles Again. I guess that was his second appearance, right?
What, Fear? Is that Adventures into Fear number 13?
It just says Fear number 13.
Because Adventures into Fear, because that was the one. The Fear number 13. Those were like those 70, because I'm thinking Adventures into Fear 13 is the first appearance of Howard the Duck.
No. And then we got, I thought that was issue 18.
No.
Oh, then we got Jungle Action number 4, which was there.
Black Panther.
Yeah, and I'm just looking, and they got Stan Soapbox. Who was writing all these bullpen bulletins? Was that Flo?
Was that Roy? It wasn't Stan. I don't think it was Stan. He wouldn't have been done it doing it then.
I don't know.
You know what? It could have been a good. I would put my money that Roy was had a good hand in that.
Because the whole Stan Soapbox in this particular issue is all about
but he does the Stan Soapbox, of course.
It's all about the Tomb of Dracula and their brand new magazine called Dracula Lives, which is 75 cents. Go out and read it, it says.
We would have.
Oh, no, here it is. I'm sorry. Look at this. Roy Thomas, who else, and the Titanic team of Gil Kane and Ernie Chua are presenting a brand new series in Supernatural Thrillers number 3. Wonder what it was.
Supernatural Thrillers is the. I remember that's eventually the Mummy and all those guys came in that title, so it's they were just like stories. They were like horror story stuff.
And then in the back, John, it says things here. Never finished high school. Now you can get your diploma without going back. And this is something for you, John. Don't be half a man. Sign up for Charles Atlas. Don't get that sand kicked in your face. All right? I'm looking through here. What you could buy in their WAN ads. I used to love these WAN ads. You could see ads in here to buy a first issue of Amazing Fantasies for like $20.
I would just like anybody who's still listening to know that.
Yeah, anybody who's still out there.
No, but I want people to understand. This is what me and Mitch talk about every day. You know?
Oh, yeah, this is not something. We're not just doing that. Look at that. Why wasn't I fat back then? I could get a crash diet for only $1. Lose up to 5 pounds overnight. American Image Corporation.
What do they want you to do? Eat paper?
No, it says, learn the secret of TV's fantastic no pill, no exercise, one day reducing formula. Eat your fill, go to sleep, wake up, and lose up to 5 pounds. Amazing? Sure. But guaranteed to work or your money back. Send only $1. Sorry, no COD.
What do you think that was? A pill that made you shit blood?
I have no idea. I'm just looking at some of the comics list. Buy comic books. Look at this. Oh, man, oh, man. Boy, they got some good ads, but be a game warden. Free fun facts. More Body Atlas. Be, you know, look at this. I mean, they got a lot of good ads in this book. Here's stuff for Corgi Cars. Be the Corgi Boy. You know? I'm telling you, you got a lot of entertainment for 20 cents, man. It's a great book. And don't forget, John, your number one job, you could sell grit. Remember that?
Which one?
Boys 12 and older sell grit in your spare time.
The only person I ever knew that ever read one of those was Matt Herring.
Matt Herring tried to sell grit. I remember him telling me that.
That's freaking crazy. I wonder what that was.
Here is my favorite ads. Ready? I would love these ads. These are the Johnson Smith Company, and they sold X-ray glasses, giant balloons, psychedelic light bulbs, spy pens, hypno coins, all this stuff. Now, I remember sitting on my grandmother's back porch and saving up my money to send for these because I imagined if I assembled these particular items, I could become a superhero.
Mitch, I just want to ask you, too. Do you remember the money maker one? Like, you could make the money?
Yeah, that's here, too. Yeah, put paper in and it turns out to be a dollar. Yeah.
For some reason, when I was a kid, when I looked at that, I was like, oh, my God, if I can buy that, I can make money and I can have unlimited money.
Oh, I'm looking at this now. They got the guy with the X-ray specs looking through girls' clothes. So there'd be people complaining about that nowadays. We have, the spy pen, too. I'm sure bald people would be upset because you can put a bald wig on. Realistic helium. Realistic-looking blood. Disgusting mess set. You can get fake dog mess for a dollar. Hypnotic whirling coin. Sunbat. Sea monkeys. Of course, there's sea monkeys in here. Develop a He-Man voice. Everything's a dollar. Pretty much a dollar. You could take over the world with a dollar back then. Why would you want a squirrel call? Call squirrels to you with a magic whistle. I don't know. But on a laser gun for only $2. There you go. Yep, I always thought if you bought these things, you could put them on. You could put the X-ray glasses on, the magnetic thing that lifted up with 100 pounds, and you could climb walls. I always thought you could become your own superhero if you did all this stuff. So, anyway, that's just craziness. Man, we're all over. It's been an hour and a half today. This has been like three episodes. This is like our summer spectacular, giant size issue. It's been crazy. See what the Guardians have done to us? They've made us, the power cosmic has multiplied many times, like Ego, the living planet.
But it was a good time, Mitch. It was a good time.
It was a good episode. I hope people take it in small bites. Maybe they listen to this over a couple days. Maybe they read the main story and then they read the backup issues, you know, a little later on, backup stories. But overall, let's go see Guardians of the Galaxy. I might go see it again this week. My wife's out of town and little Mitchie's home by himself with nothing to do. So I might run off to the bargain matinee.
Well, like I said, I've already seen it four times, and I recommend to see it again. It's always fun.
It is always fun. What's the next up? We're going to talk about... We can do a Wonder Woman in a couple weeks, because we'll all go see that. But you know what I'm waiting for on July 7th, don't you?
What's that, Mitch?
Spider-Man Homecoming!
Oh, yeah, that's going to be great.
Yeah, right? And then Thor. And you know what, John? In June, you know what this means? June will be 1 year since the Power Cosmic started.
Really?
Yeah, you showed up in June, and you and I went there. The very first episode, I drove by that diner when I went to see my mom the other day. We sat outside and ate food and talked about the Hulk TV show.
Look at that.
It's been 1 year since you ripped off those people and stole those comic books for all that money.
And that's that.
And that's that. This has been a production of Big Fedora Marketing, LLC. The folks that bring you the terrific Comic-Con, GamerCon, and so much more. Thanks for listening.